STDs. Here we go again, another week of Swing Thoughts. The regular season is upon us. We're doing it weekly. It's a lot of work for GSL and Coach Tim, but you're worth it. We think you're worth it. Do we not?
Absolutely. My goodness. Where would we be without our faithful listeners?
Well, like
the untold millions of them.
That's right. Well, I'd answer your question by saying we would just be doing what we always do, which is just talk to each other. We just wouldn't record it. Yeah. Welcome, everyone. Happy to have you along. Hope your golf season is going well. One of our former guests, my buddy Grant, calls her my golf girlfriend. I can't remember her name now. It doesn't matter. She's the woman that does the podcast that I, you know, I'm 100 years old. But here, she always starts her podcast with, "Hello, golf friends. Hello, my golf friends." Can't remember her name. Well, that's all right. This program is brought to you and baked fresh weekly by the fine folks at, let's start in reverse order, secretgolf.links. Go check them out. Oscar Bravo, Tim. We finally have, we have this year's Oscar Bravo finery. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Oscar Bravo, my friend?
Well, they're the most amazing golf shirt you will ever see and wear. Made of fine Italian fabric. They just feel so good against your skin. And they do all that stuff that modern golf polos do. They wick away moisture. And they look amazing. I'm not sure they repel mustard and chocolate ice cream, but they do look amazing. So check out whoisoscarbravo.com.
I like that you use the phrase every week, wick away. Wick away the moisture. By the way, the woman who I was thinking of a second ago is was our guest, Kathy Hartwood.
She was
Dudley Hart's sister, played on the LPGA Tour, and now has a great podcast called Above Par. And I recommend it. It's very short. It's like a amuse-bouche of podcasts. It's like 15 or 17 minutes every... I think she does it every couple of days, and it's... It's very good. And of course, our title sponsor, where would we be without the fine folks at TaylorMade Golf?
Every driver has an inertia number. The higher the number, the more forgiving the driver. Now, golf is about to discover the first ever driver that combines TaylorMade speed with the forgiveness of 10K inertia. The all-new QI10. More forgiveness means more long, straight drives, even on off-center strikes. The days of missing the fairway are numbered. Get ready to experience your drives in 10K with the all-new QI10. Only from TaylorMade. Visit TaylorMadeGolf.ca.
So there you have it. Great to have everyone along. How's everyone's golf season going? Hopefully well. You know, the ups and downs, the vagaries of everyone's year, you know. We're coming down to the end of May. I don't know, wherever you guys live, where Tim and I live, the weather has been pretty... It's kind of shitty, actually. I mean, it's been okay. There's some sunny days, but there's been a lot of days of rain.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm waiting for it to warm up. I'm old now. I need a certain temperature before I'm able to function.
Well, Freddie, my boxer dog seems to be doing okay. I went out for a walk with him the other day, and normally in the rain, he just looks on the porch and goes, "No way, Jose." But he's been going out, so it means the temperature's warm enough to play golf and deal with the rain. But yeah, I think there's been some summer-like days, but it's cooled off right now.
That's the problem. The problem is it's like there's a day or two every so often that's like, there we go. And then like today, the high here is going to be, I don't think we're going to get above 18.
Yeah, and this is a Canadian Open week too.
That's right, which I want to get to. But the reason I brought up weather is because I, as you know, I play quite a bit of tournament golf. And I can't remember if we did this. Did we do the show last week before I got retroed out or after I got retroed out?
Well, I'm learning you got retroed out. So this would be, we recorded it before.
So, and I bring it up now. Because the one
You're
of our
in the grieving process.
Oh no, it's fine. I'm good. But one of the things a couple weeks ago, I told you, I think I shared on the show. I was shot like my highest score since 2016, And then in the last couple of weeks, I've kind of returned to sort of a normal. I've been playing some decent golf, not great, but pretty good in tournament conditions. So I go to a Ontario Senior Match Play qualifier last week, and I'm playing okay. You know, that kind of, I think we all can experience that. And comment if you want, where we all know when we're, whatever handicap we're at, when we're sort of having like what seems like a no stress or lower stress round. It's just kind of things are going okay. Nothing so great and nothing so bad. You know what I'm saying so far?
Oh, yeah. We just seem to roll on along. And I know my tendency is to get caught in a story. Like, oh, today is a lovely day. I have it in the slot. And, oh, I can't wait to tell Howard or put the score in and watch my index nosedive.
Yeah.
And then inevitably shite happens.
Well, it wasn't, and I love what you said there, but in this particular case, it wasn't even like that. Like, I wasn't like, oh, I'm on fire today. It was like, I'm in a qualifier and I'm just going along, kind of having an average front nine. I'm one over through most of the front nine. I make a couple late bogeys, but no big deal because, you know, qualifiers are hard, blah, blah, blah. Then we, and again, this goes to the idea of, you know, in every round of golf, there's going to be some challenges. So I was the first group out, and we played the front nine in an hour and 40 minutes. So nice. That was great.
Yeah.
Because there's a certain rhythm to that.
Mm-hmm.
But this was a qualifier, not just for senior players, but also for mid-am and younger players. So the field was filled. So we get to the 10th tee and there's a 45-minute wait.
Yipes. Oh, my goodness.
Again, no big deal. I'm sitting in my car trying to close my eyes, sort of not meditate, but just be calm. Playing okay. Par 10, bogey 11, triple 12.
Ouch.
And I would I don't want to go through the triple, but it was on a par 3. I made a 6 on a par 3. And if I had been more present, I would have taken it because I got a horrible lie in this bunker and I should have taken an unplayable, but I tried to play it. But I played the next 6 holes even par, 2 birdies, 2 bogeys, including birdieing the 18th hole to shoot 79. And they only take 5 spots at this qualifier for seniors, and I got the 5th spot. So I'm pretty happy. You know, I go in there, I'm like, well, did the best I could, birdied the last hole, shot 79, hand in my card, have something to eat, start going home, and I'm like, hey, that's cool. I just qualified for another provincial event.
Absolutely.
And you know, I had this emotional kind of like, yeah, you know, you did your best. You made a triple. No big deal. Still qualified.
Playing light, bubbly music.
That's right. and then I get home. And then I won't back down.
Exactly.
But I won't. Anyway, I get home and... when I left, I was tied for 5th. And then I realized, I had this revelation that this isn't a stroke play event. There's only 32 guys in the match play, so there's brackets. So there's no way they can squeeze an extra guy in. And there was another fellow and I who tied at 79. And unlike America, where they have playoffs, like 2-for-1, 3-for-2, whatever, in Ontario, they go retrogression, which means, so if we both have the same number, who had the lower back nine? And this gentleman shot 35 on the back nine, and I shot 40 on the back nine because I made the triple.
Mm.
As I said, so I'm the first alternate. Basically, I'm not going to get in. But what made me laugh, or my joke's been ever since then, people ask me, hey, because a couple guys I was at another tournament with this past couple of days ago, I was at an invitational, some of the same guys were there. The guy said, hey, I thought you were in. I go, I know. I said, but the guy shot 35 on the back nine. Listen, and he said, oh, that's terrible. I go, listen, when you shoot, this guy shot 44, 35. I said, when you shoot 44 in the front nine, you're supposed to continue to suck. I said, how dare you not continue having a shitty day? You shoot 40. Listen, have a good back nine. Shoot 38. Shoot 39. Don't shoot 35.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
The temerity.
Exactly. How dare you? So that, but it was a great experience. Like I said, you know, and I'm at the point now, we were talking, you and I, off our show the other day. Like, I wouldn't say nothing phases me, but very little phases me
What, even
are you saying you got phased?
No, I didn't. That's what I'm saying. I made the triple.
Oh, okay.
I made the triple, and then I went, you know, two birdies in the next six holes. I mean, I did walk to the next tee after the triple thinking, well, that's too bad because it's hard to recover from three over par in one hole. But what I did think, one of my other thoughts was, if I can make a couple birdies, or at least a birdie, would turn that into a double. And that's how I thought. I thought, okay, if I make a birdie, that's just a double. If I make two, it's like a bogey. And as luck would have it, I did make two birdies, including the last hole. So I kind of erased that. But, you know, that's the, you know, that's what I guess the moral of the story is, you put when we put ourselves out there in rounds of significance, you also have to be okay with some shit that's going to happen and be prepared for it to happen. Because, listen, dude, I played in a tournament on Monday, saw our friend Ken Osborne. This is funny. So he and I are playing this invitational, and I see him, like, I think it's our third hole, maybe his fourth hole, and we intersect on a tee box. I'm playing one way, he's playing the other. I go, hey, KO, how's it going? He says, well, he says, I started with the quad and it got worse. I laughed. That's the way he said it. He goes, well, I started with the quad and then it went downhill from there. And so
that's great timing.
Yeah, it was perfect. And again, the takeaway is, as always, whether you're playing in a club event or you're trying to qualify for something provincially, you know, it's there. Everyone goes through it. Everyone has bad rounds, man.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't got there. I don't know whether I ever will. But that is such a gift, or maybe I would say maybe it's a skill to be able to undergo stuff like that and just let it effing go. It's just, it's hard to do, but the alternative is violence to your golf clubs. The air will go purple with invective and various expletives. And
I think, you know, and we can segue to your book, because I think the words that you use in the book, Seven Transformational One Pot Recipes for Golf. Are you still sticking with seven transformational practices? Because I like the word practice.
Yes, okay. Absolutely.
Because
they are practices.
That's what I want to say. Like, today, what we thought we would do is examine one of the practices from Tim's book. And as a way of getting there, to bridge that, shooting like I did, I think on the podcast, I think I said I shot 92, but I found out later it was 89. Whatever it was the highest score I'd recorded, like where I wrote down and had to hand in a card. And that day, and I think I mentioned this on the podcast, I practiced, my takeaway for me that day was to practice being okay with having, you know, a pretty shitty round for me. But I didn't want to make it a shitty round for the guys I was playing with. And I also have practice knowing it's just one round and golf will come back. And you and I were talking about it on the show, and you said it wouldn't surprise me if you went out and shot a good round. And sure enough, I did. I think I sent you a note. You were right. I shot 75 the next round.
Mm-hmm.
So when I made the triple bogey in the qualifier, I've been doing this a long time. I have the practice of knowing, okay, that sucks. And I also had the thought, that's probably going to put me out of this thing. But, so you think that, but there is an opportunity now in this next tee. Let's see what you can do. So that's different than what you just described me as throwing clubs and screaming and pounding the ground.
Oh, I was describing myself.
No, but that was, all of us. But I'm a long way from that guy. But I've had to practice to get to a point. And then the book, you know, you talk about different practices, and I want you to take the reins now, and let's go to I was reading it this morning, the very first practice. And in Tim's book, it says, don't be scared, it ain't weird to meditate. So what is in the book, what is the first practice, and what can people learn from it?
Well, the first first practice is, just as you said, it's meditation. And the value of meditation is it allows you to build the skill of awareness. And so I go into some detail saying that a lot of people misconstrue what meditation is and, you know, the supposed benefits of it, such as I'm supposed to clear my mind, stop thinking, and it's going to make me calm and all that. And those are, a lot of those are just not, they're just kind of myths. Yeah, it'll make you calmer. But overall, I think the core thing that comes from it is your ability to develop your awareness. And what I talk about is being able to witness yourself. And I think what you were talking about when you made the triple, you went to the next tee and went, oh, that just happened, and I'm going through this. But rather than being reactive in, you know, the ways that we talked about earlier, slamming clubs, getting lost in a story, whatever, is being able to witness ourselves and go, oh, that's, or perhaps I'm in it right now. Perhaps I am angry. Perhaps I do have a whole story that's unspooling in my head. The day is lost, whatever. But when you practice meditation, you develop the skill of awareness that you can just kind of see yourself almost objectively, as if you're almost outside of yourself, and see what's going on. And then you can respond in a way that serves you and that's more appropriate.
Well, and I totally love that, because I was looking at a passage here, and it's, and to your point, when we say I am angry or I suck, you've identified yourself with those feelings. As you say in the book, this is who I am. And from that place, and I think this is, to underline this, it's impossible to become emotionally neutral and make choices that serve you. You know, and, you know, Ken Osborne, who is a buddy of ours and a fellow guru, you know, what he talks about is, and you underline the point beautifully, having the reaction to golf shots be only a few choices, neutral and or excited about a good shot. So neutral about your bad shots, and that neutrality allows you to let them go quicker. And to your point in the seven practices, where you don't identify them, it's not who you are anymore, it's just something that happened. And that's where mindfulness comes in, being mindful that that's how you're, you know, reacting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the things I talk about in that book is it's kind of a radical thing to think about, and it really is counterintuitive to the Western way that we generally associate with our minds. But it's almost like saying, my mind is angry right now, instead of I am angry, because as you just said, that identifies you. That's who you are, and you don't have a choice from that standpoint. In essence, you're a victim, and that's a powerless place to be. But when you sort of say, oh, because what you're really doing, if you say my mind is angry or my mind is doing this thing right now, you're able to distance yourself from what's going on, because in many ways all that's going on, it's your past conditioning. Mm-hmm. It's the stuff, it's the way you've always reacted, you know, since probably you're a little kid. But the reason you're reading a book like this or listening to, I think, a podcast like this is because you say, you know what, I'm tired with that nonsense. I want to forge a new way of going about it. But you're still going to have reactions to things. But when you practice mindfulness and sort of distancing yourself from what, how you habitually react, then you can make a choice. Like you said, I could go like, oh, well, that happened. I love, you know what, you reminded me of it. One of the things, you've got a number of really great things that you say when, you know, say a bad shot. I remember you say that, I remember playing with you and you hit some off the world shot and went, well, that just happened.
That's right. And my other one is, well, you don't see that every day.
Yeah, exactly. And what I love about those is that, again, it's like, sort of, well, that's not me, you know, being, you know, stuck in the place of being a hack and, oh, I'll never get better. And, oh, man. It's a way of just saying, whoa, that happened. And now I can deal with it.
And we all play, like, in the round of chaos where I shot whatever the big number was, on some point during the round, I'd hit a pretty good drive on a par four, and I had, like, 9-iron in my hand in the, you know, sort of a 127, 33-yard range. Pretty standard. My point about the number is it was a pretty standard swing. And I shanked it. And while the shank was in the air, I went, well, you don't see that every day. And I lost the ball, and I made a triple on the hole. But it my reaction was so not visceral, but more exactly. Sort of like, and I play with a lot of guys, so do you, so does everyone listening, that say things like, you should have seen me drive it on Monday, or
yep.
or any version of that where they're trying to explain to the group, and I was the guiltiest of this, that I'm a lot better than I'm showing you right now. And I think for me, one of the hurdles I got over as part of the pathway to par. Remember Pathways to Par?
It's
part of my seminars, Pathway to Par. But to become more neutral, or neutrality as a golfer, is not explaining that I used to be good yesterday, and that I usually do this better than that. Do you know what I mean? Like,
oh, totally.
And I think because that is a way of distancing yourself from the, well, as you say in the book, to not, you aren't your shot. You're not, this isn't, you're not, you as a human being aren't on trial every bad shot you hit.
Exactly.
Yeah, and when you hit a good shot, it doesn't mean you've ascended to this level of, you know, enlightenment or anything. It's just a golf shot that you hit.
Yeah.
I remember one of the best experiences that I had in my writing career was working with Ben Kern, who was at one point he was the director of golf at the National, Devil's Pulpit, former PGA Tour player. And I remember him saying, just very concisely, as was Ben's way, he said, never explain a shot. And so let's say that you got a tough lie, the ball's, you know, kind of in this rat's nest, and you chunk it out of there. And to your point earlier, if you identify with it and think, oh, I'm not that bad, I have to explain, oh, guys, the grass was against me and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
When you explain it, in essence, that's what you're doing, like you were talking about. You're saying, hey, I'm better than this, guys. I'm not that bad. And that's from this ego-driven place of, there's no getting around it, shame, not good enough, my status is diminished.
Right.
You know, you might judge me as not being a good player.
You know, what you just said, and it's kind of a good adjunct to what I was trying to say about not explaining to the group that you used to be better yesterday, but mm-hmm. not explaining shots. That's a tough, and I've this year, funny you brought it up, this year I've also stopped. I've tried to really stop explaining what went on, good or bad. Actually, no, if it's really good, I'll say it out loud, like, you know, that's as good as I can hit it, or
yep.
Man, I just I'll get excited. Like the other day in this tournament, I hit this sort of hooky 5-iron around this tree, and I was like, that's how it's done. Like, I was joking around, right?
Totally, but you're anchoring something really
right.
good.
But what I won't do, and this happened again, I played a big invitational on Monday. Lots of the big senior guys were there. I could name some names that people would know. And so it's a lot of, you know, it's a real tournament. And I hit a couple shots in that tournament, particularly with my 3-wood. One of them I topped 40 yards. Like, I'm not even kidding. One I topped 40 yards, and the other one I hit so fat, it might have gone 150 yards. But the guys in my group, I never explained to them why that happened. Because when you stop explaining every shot, good or bad, well, bad mostly is what guys do. Lie mm-hmm. was shitty, the wind, blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
What you're doing is anchoring the negative. It's the opposite.
100%. 100%. I mean, that's, you know, I love that what you talked about. You know, you hook this fiver. That's the way it's done. You're anchoring this good stuff because that's the way our brains work. Our brains anchor high emotion. So if we go into all the bad shit, the misery and woe, and oh my God, this is against me. Next time you're in that situation, that's what your brain is going to draw on, because your brain's job is to prevent you from pain and from dying. So if you anchor good things, you can draw on those. One of the stories I tell in the book is, this is many, many years ago at a Canadian Open. I had a chance to talk with Fred Couples, and I think I asked him something like, you know, because this is kind of stuff that I was thinking about even back then. I said, when you've got a really tough shot, you know, what do you think about? Because that's, at the time, I thought that's what it was about, mm-hmm. thinking the right thoughts. And he said, whatever club I have in my hand, I just remember when I hit a really great shot with that club.
Mm-hmm.
And then I go ahead and hit it. And I just love that. It was just so Freddie Couples, direct, sharp, and like...
And simple, too.
Exactly. Again, very Freddie Couples.
You know, so I've told the story of making a triple and then, you know, kind of sort of dealing with it. The other day, there's about 120 guys in this tournament. It's at Islington, so it's a pretty sweet golf course.
Back to the
weather, we got a 2.5 hour rain delay. So, you know, it was a lot to deal with. We didn't really get a long warm up. And the next thing you know, we actually ended up playing completely rain free. And I played with some really, really good golfers. One of the guys I played with, really interesting character, played on the Canadian Tour, the Nationwide, got his amateur status back. And this tournament for seniors was 50 and up. Now, they separate some of the older guys by handicap, mm-hmm. but I was in the lowest handicap group. So it included 50-year-olds and guys my age, and I'm 64. I was the oldest guy in the group. But this guy... his name is Jerry Hines. You know, he was like number one in the order of merit in Canada. Like, he's a real golfer. And yeah. And we were both having a pretty good day. Now, he ended up beating me by 3. But at one point, well into the round, back to the idea that on that day, I knew I was playing well. I was playing a little bit above my average. At the qualifier, I was kind of playing like, oh, this is kind of a normal day of golf. Nothing crazy is happening. But that day, I'd made some birdies. You know, unlike Kent, who had not a great day, when he saw me, I was already like one under par. And I was playing, but I knew I was playing well. And that continued for 13 holes. But because it was a shotgun, we started on the 5th hole. So when we were on 18 at Islington, I knew I got 5 holes to go. And I had the thought... We had to wait to hit, and I was sort of thinking, you know, I have the thought that I'm playing well. I know what it usually takes to win these tournaments because I've been lucky enough to win one or two. And I thought, okay, if I can make a birdie or two coming in, you know, I might have a chance. And I'm happy to report that I did not. But this guy, this Canadian Tour guy, who I sat, fascinating character,
yeah.
Lovely, lovely guy. Who way more experienced than me. We were about the same at that point. And I bogeyed 3 of the last 5 holes. And he did not. And he shot 73, finished 2nd. And I shot 76 and finished 7th. Just a couple. I only finished 4 shots out of first. But at that point, I was on or around the lead of this tournament. I just know it. But it's not like I didn't dismiss that thought. But I definitely tightened up. My swing on 18 was steery. I topped a 3-wood on the 3rd last hole. Still made par, but I could feel my swing leaving me. Again, the takeaway being that good or bad thoughts, you know, like it's hard to dismiss them. And, you know, I did my best. It's not like I went, you know, triple, double, double. I just was slightly less sharp than I had been for the previous 13 holes. And it was a good lesson for me. I was like, oh, yeah, there it is again. You can think those things. And I even thought to myself, okay, you're thinking that. That's fine. Now what are you going to do on this shot? But I was just 10% less free.
Yeah.
I missed a putt on the first hole. So it would be my 4th last hole. Had like an 8-footer for birdie. It just missed it, you know, where mm-hmm. that one had gone in prior. You know what I mean? Like, and yeah. So the difference between that guy, who's got way more experience than me, is that he just kept on playing. He played all the way to the end. And that's why I said to him after, I said, I was really impressed because, you know, you and I were, you know, similar. We were playing about the same, but you just finished better than me.
Well, it's so cool that you that you would be able to have that conversation with him. A lot of people wouldn't, but because you're a student of the game and you, these are the types of things that fascinate you, like what happened to me, what happens to others, that you could have that conversation. But the thing that I want to just sort of pull out of, well, ask you is that, what did you learn from that experience? Like, what can you take forward from that in terms of, because there's nothing wrong with having the thoughts. I mean, you can't control our thoughts. They come. To me, it's always about, okay, how do I respond to that thought? You know, what do I need to do? Because it's, we've all had it. You've got a career score going, or hoping you know, this is the day you break 190, 80, whatever, or you're in a tournament, or you know, finally beat your obnoxious brother-in-law, and then you don't. So what was the learning for you that you could take forward to your next tournament?
I asked this guy, because he was very kind. It turns out he's a big Humble and Fred fan. How I found that out was about the fourth or fifth hole we played. I made a really good shot. He went, nice one, double H. And I was like, oh, fuck, here we go. So, but it turned out, too, at dinner, we have a lot of good friends in common. One of my best friends from the National, a guy that passed away, Canadian Tour player named Craig Marseille, was one of this guy's best friends.
Oh, I remember Craig.
Craig was a sweet guy. Great golfer.
Yeah, he was. Yep.
So Jerry and I, this guy, Jerry Hines, and I started talking. And again, I'm fascinated by how his career and how he played. And you could just tell this guy was so good. Fuck. He was really good. And like, I hit it good for a 64-year-old. But this guy and the two other guys in there, Jerry's 14 years younger than me, and he was 40 or 50 yards by me all the time.
Dang kids.
No, I know. I thought that. You know, these punks, these 50-year-olds. So he said, do you mind me telling you? Because I talked about this 3-wood I hit on this par 5. I kill my drive on this par 5. It's the third last hole. I kill my drive into a really strong right-to-left wind. I really controlled the ball well, made a great swing. And these guys are all waiting for these guys were 250 out. They're all around, and they're all waiting for the green to clear. I'm like 285 out. I'm just laying up. I want to hit it as far down there as I can. And I topped my 3-wood. That's the one that I topped. And he said to me, I asked him, I said, you know, you finished well. I didn't. And he unsolicited said, you know what it was with those swings? And I said, what? He said, you just went a little bit quicker. I said, what do you mean? He said, your routine changed. And he noticed it. He said, the rest of the day, he was calm. He's very, one of those really good player that's also kind. Like, what I mean is, he wasn't shy about saying good shot. And a couple times I hit great drives. He'd like, amazing swing, great rhythm. That's what he kept saying to me, great rhythm. And he said, on those swings that you made, those bad, he said, you're just out of your rhythm. He said, you just looked like you went faster. And I thought, that's the takeaway.
That's what I'm asking for.
That it comes down to, can you maintain your similar rhythm, whatever stage of golf you're at? If you're playing, can you stay in the same cadence? And I just got faster as the round wore on.
Yeah, so I'll come back to what we've been talking about is around the awareness. Is having the awareness, oh, I'm having thoughts about how this round may finish, can I keep it going, etc. And then how do I respond to that? And it's also being aware of what's happening, say, in my body. Am I holding the club tighter? Is my heart going a little bit faster? Am I walking fast? Am I talking faster? Whatever. And then when you have that awareness, you go, oh, okay. Well, I need to take some action that's going to serve me. And that could be, there's all kinds of different ways. It could be just looking around, listening, you know, being tuning into your sensations, touch, feel, cueing into your breathing. And that, in essence, slows you down. That's why I talk about the bonus of meditation is all that stuff. But it's having the awareness. Oh, maybe I'm quicker than I want to be.
Well, you talk in the book, in this chapter about, you know, we've all seen Jason Day famously close his eyes behind the ball and try and visualize the shot. But as you mentioned, there's lots of players that, you know, if you saw them in person, they close their eyes for a second or two. I do it all the time. Mm-hmm. I try, again, I'm, you know, being a little embarrassed by it sometimes. I have my sunglasses on and I can do it. But if I don't, I'll just turn away. Look, it looks like I'm looking at something away from the group, but I've got my eyes closed.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just for a second, because I want to, as you say, you kind of want to center yourself.
Yeah, and no one knows you're doing it.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's like, yeah, I mean, so, yeah, I'm self-conscious too. You know, if I'm standing there on a tee, you know, and I'm facing the people I'm looking at, and I close my eyes, well, I'm like,
Is he having at our age, it's like, are they having a stroke?
Exactly, exactly. count backwards from 10.
I'm going to wrap up this chapter of the seven transformational practices for golf. There's a great one of your sidebars. You say one of your favorite quotes comes from a Jewish psychiatrist who survived a Nazi concentration camp. And the quote is, between stimulus and response, there is a space. And in that space is our power to choose our response. And in our response lies our growth and our freedom. And I think that's so powerful. Maybe you could talk a little bit about why it resonates with you.
Well, it resonates for me because, well, just as a bit of a background, I think people find it interesting. So Viktor Frankl, he was a Jewish psychiatrist. He's put in a concentration camp. And what he found was that even though he was in really the most horrific circumstance that we can think of in our modern history, he was able to find moments of joy and happiness in terms of the way he could respond. And I thought that was really in just maybe helping, you know, someone else in the camp, or just having a conversation that would maybe perhaps brighten someone's day. So we have a choice. Our circumstances don't dictate our lives and what we're going to do, because again, we have choice. And that's the point that he makes, is that when things happen, we can certainly react to what's going on. And that's, you're not wrong, you're not bad, you're not flawed to react, but there is a space there. And if we can grasp it and be aware of that there is this space, then we can choose how we want to respond. And to me, that again is a marvelous skill to have. Not certainly in golf, but in all parts of our lives, is to be able to go, okay, wait a second. And it just takes seconds in which you can just sort of just, okay, what's going on here? Center yourself, breathe. And then the parts of you that you really want to draw on, the parts that resonate with your values, with who you really want to be, that you give that potentiality to come through.
Very well said. And part of this book that we've all eagerly anticipated since, I don't know, it seems like the 70s when we first started talking about, no, I'm kidding. Listen, man, it's a huge project, and it's going to be a real book. Like, you could open it and everything, and it's got pages. And and there's that's just one of the transformational practices. We didn't even, there's so much in that chapter. But we don't have the time to explore all of it. But I would say that of the many things that have helped me be less, you know, chaotic and, have a bit more success. Like, you know, I would just say that where I finished in this tournament, it could have been like a top two or three finish would have been amazing. But I beat a lot of good players that day. So it's not like I blew up. I could feel a little bit less sharp, a little bit less focused, and apparently got a little bit quicker, just enough to make bogeys instead of the pars and birdies I was making. A couple quick things. We're recording this on Wednesday, May 29th, the week of the Canadian Open, on the Humble and Fred Show. Freddie does the, we have a sponsor, Bodog, a gambling site. And so we talked about the odds. No surprise, who you think is the odds-on favorite? Who would you guess?
A certain Northern Irishman?
Yeah, McIlroy. McIlroy in second place. This kind of bugged me a bit. So McIlroy, you can understand, is the odds-on favorite by quite a bit. But the guy in second place is the guy that lost in the playoff last year.
Tommy.
Yes, how is Tommy Fleetwood, who hasn't won on the PGA Tour, Nick Taylor has more than once, including mm-hmm. his National Open, which is like winning a major to a Canadian. So let's give him a major. Right. How does Tommy and I don't even like I was saying to Freddie, like, Nick Taylor is like way in the distance. So that kind of peeved
in the betting thing.
Yes.
Like, wait.
Oh, way, well, yes.
I don't know. I guess you could come up with a story that Nick Taylor is going to come in. You know, he's going to be, everyone's going to want his time, you know, making a big deal of it. So maybe they say there's too much emotional baggage
there. Yeah, it could be.
But Tommy Fleetwood, his day is coming. It really is. So why not be in the Canadian Open? Because it makes such a great story if he won this year. Why not?
Well, I got nothing against him. He's amazing. Also, I love his golf swing.
He's a great player, good guy, and also he is always such a wonderful subject for that Connor, the mimic.
Yeah, yeah, the guy that does the impressions of golf, Connor something. Yeah,
yeah. Okay. I don't know. Again,
I'm still trying to think. I'm trying to remember who was it. Kathy Hartwood that I was trying to remember. There's
on
a kid
with tonight.
That's a good reference. There's a kid that I met through our friend Mark Evershed about 3 summers ago. I was out in, is it Shed? Is Shed's in Port Colborne? Is that where he is? I don't know.
Port Dover.
Thank you. I love sometimes when our show just becomes old white men trying to remember things. So I've gone out to see Shed's and played in his little friends tournament there a couple times. And I met this young man named Michael Blair, who is a journeyman, late-blooming Canadian tour pro wannabe, but one of the nicest guys and one of the best golfers I've ever played with. Like, this kid has got tour quality ball striking. And I've been around with some of these guys lately. Michael hits it as good as anybody on the PGA Tour, and he's been struggling down there in Florida on the mini tours, but the nicest kid. And I saw this morning that he qualified for the Canadian Open.
Oh, great.
Sent him a nice note. Said, go get him, kid. I was just telling you a quick story. I played with Mark. Mark has this, you've been invited. Friends of Mark, come down and play a little tournament, have some hot dogs. It's fun. So I'm playing with Blair, who I've sort of, again, I've gotten to know him a little bit. And we're playing this par 5. And I hit, again, a good drive. And he hits it out. Some ridiculous amount by me, 80 yards by me. And I lay up. Didn't top my 3-wood, but I hit a nice shot. And I get up to Michael's ball. Mike and I are in the same cart. And it's like 230, 240 to the green into a little slight breeze. Not a lot, but enough to get your attention. And he gets up, does his thing, and hits this shot. And it just stays up in the air, and it sort of cuts slightly. And it lands on the green, like 235 or so away. And I said, do I want to know?
Yeah.
Do I want to know what that club was? And he sort of, he's very humble. He says, well, go ahead. I go, 4-iron? He goes, mm-mm. I go, come on. He goes, yeah, little 5-iron. 5-iron! I would have had to tee up my driver. Like,
exactly.
Like, 5-iron, but just like, it was like you and I hitting a 9-iron. Just the easy swing.
Yeah.
So
How old is he?
He came to it late. Like, he missed a couple years because of injury. He did college and all that stuff. So he's late 20s. Like, he's late to the game in terms of... But he's the kind of guy that if he gets a break, I think he would do well. He's got a good head on his shoulders. Yeah,
nice. Yeah, it's just the I always just say those kids, they just don't have psychic or physical scar tissue like we do.
I would agree, but I can tell you, like, you know, there's a lot of guys our age that, you know, what's that old joke in golf? You know, the older I get, the further I used to hit it.
Exactly.
I'm not one of those guys. I was always decently long in my 30s at the National. I was probably longer than the average bear, but I was never like a, you know, I was never like these kids. Well, I never hit a golf ball like the kids do now. We never did. You know, we, for what we had, the equipment we used, I could get it out there from time to time. But not like I'm the type of golf these kids play. And even this Jerry Hines guy, like the 2 other gentlemen in the group, all very good players, but big men. When I say big, mm-hmm. like stocky, strong, maybe a bit overweight, but strong, right? They were all 40 by me all day, like all day long. And like I don't have enough meat on my bones.
I don't.
Like, I'm in good shape. Parenthetically, yeah. For my age, so are you. Yeah. But not like these guys. They're stocky, strong, 240, 250.
Wow.
Yeah. So there's a lot of meat behind that swing. I just can't generate that kind of power. No matter how good you hit it on the face. Like I said, several times on Monday, I hit it on the button, and I was still like lasering where they were.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, people don't realize is that your mass adds so much to the swing, and so, you know, you rotate back and then you move, then that mass starts to move forward. There's a ton of power in that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's your weight, and you use it in the right sequence. Man, that can just really launch the ball.
Well, you look at someone like Rahm looks thick and stocky. Jack Nicklaus hit it long because, you know, Jack was a strong, stocky. Xander Schauffele hits it long. He's got hockey player ass. Like, they're all thick and strong. And you talk about Freddie Couples. I've been to tournaments where Freddie's been at, and he's, you know, wearing shorts. He's got huge calves. I think you make a good point that there's that mass behind the golf ball. I mean, John Daly hits it long because he's a big, fat, gooey dude.
Yeah, well, that's funny you mentioned about hockey, but there was a young man on the golf team, Justin Allen, who is down in Florida now, trying his best to make a go of it a pro, and he's actually won two events. But that she used to always say, sorry, Justin, if you're listening, that he had a butt like Sidney Crosby, like, oh my God. And you get that thing going.
Oh yeah.
I mean, when Justin hits a ball, he just has this control fade and it just stays in the air for so long. It's just unbelievable. And the way he just, you know, unleashes himself into a ball. It's quite amazing.
Yeah. The long ball is no longer possible for us. It's, you know, the odd time, like at Blue Springs, a couple
especially
weeks.
With our butts.
Yeah, I got no butt. My butt, my joke now is my butt went out in my 40s. My butt went out for cigarettes, never came home, left me with the kids. At Blue Springs, in this tournament a couple weeks ago, the conditions were right. And no, this was at Greystone the second day. I hit a drive on the 17th at Greystone. It will be the longest drive I hit all year. Just because I hit it on the button, a little bit of wind behind, and it hit the downslope, and it went a long way. But these guys hit that drive just about every time. The 10th hole at Islington is 205 yards. It's a great hole.
It's got
hazard to the right. It's a very narrow green. And the wind was howling. So 205, probably playing 230, and I choked down on a 3-wood, hit it pretty good. I hit it pin high right, just off the green. The rest of the guys were all hitting long irons. One guy that hit the green hit a 3-iron that just, it sounded different. It just made a different sound than my balls make.
Totally, totally.
A couple quick things before I let you go. You're a golf writer. You have got a golf brain. Why does Lexi Thompson retire? Did you hear about that?
Yeah, I did. I think that just the stress of tour life and just all the machinations that go on. I don't really know her, but from what I witnessed and heard her speak, I think she's kind of a high strung individual, and I think that over time it just you know, I got it, I don't got it, you know. I choked. I didn't. I just think it. The grind of it has just got to her, and she says, "You know what? I don't want this life anymore."
Mm-hmm.
And she's just gonna let it go. And you know, it's interesting to watch that. I think that women at the height of their game or near the top tend to retire from the game earlier than men. And I think some of that comes down to wanting to have a family, and that kind of thing. But I also think that, you know, I could get in trouble for this, but women generally have a more balanced approach to life. When there's lots of stuff you'll read about. There's not as many women, you know, in the boardroom or at, you know, high levels of corporations and I remember Margaret Wente in the Globe. I really liked her. And then I think she got canceled for some reason, but she said, well, you know what? Wait a sec. Women, a lot of women, again, generally speaking, are not as caught up in the whole egoic thing of achievement. And that a lot of women, they're just kind of, you know what? Maybe I don't need all this nonsense.
I think you're right.
Like a little bit more balance in my life.
Well, that's what it is. It's like because in order to get to those, you know, those places, you have to sacrifice a lot. And those men that do aren't maybe necessarily the greatest fathers, the greatest shape, the more mm-hmm. balanced life. But you're right about LPGA Tour players, Lorena Ochoa.
Yep,
famously retired early. There's a couple others that I can't remember, but I'm having a tough time remembering anything today.
Suri Pak,
yep. There's another LPGA player that was in the news for the most hilarious reason this week. I don't know if you saw it. She's an English golfer. I really like her. Very attractive young lady and a great player.
Charlie Hull
smoking a cigarette. Yeah, and it's such an English thing. Like, she's got a cigarette in her mouth. She's not like they didn't catch her on camera off to the side, puffing it, like taking a drag and then taking it out of her mouth. She's got it in her mouth, like just lodged in there while she's signing autographs.
That's fucking, so perfect.
It's so good.
It's like you know, the old days of like a, you know, I remember being a window cleaner in high school, and there was a guy who could clean windows with the cigarette out. And I went, how do you do that? How do you not have the smoke just totally irritate your eyes and everything?
So, when I heard about the story, I had to look it up. I'm like, so I Googled Charlie Hull smoking, and it made me laugh when I saw her because he's got this butt on the side of her mouth signing like little kids' autographs.
That's so
fantastic.
Great. Hey, kids, sorry about the ash there.
That's right. Well, there you have it. Little news here. I got an email from, who's it from here? From Tim, I'm not sure how to pronounce his last name, Akuna Makata, who has a sale on. I won't get into the details, but there's an unprecedented, this is how the email says. Subject line, a sale on golf lessons. And this is an unprecedented opportunity, and it expires. Well, by the time you listen to this, it already expired. But how about this? For listeners of the podcast, will you extend the deadline until the end of the weekend?
Yes.
I'm putting you on the spot.
Yeah, but you're like the director of sales of the Hubble and Fred Show. You know how this shit works. So,
well, the reason I shouldn't have brought it up, because we're going to release this show after the email offer expires. But for listeners of the show, if you want to take advantage of this, it's O'Connor Golf. It's can I give out your email?
Yeah, tim@oconnorgolf.ca.
There you go. So if you hear this, everyone else, they're done. But for the listeners of the podcast, until the end of the Canadian Open, you get to take advantage of this unprecedented sale of golf lessons. I love that. All right, dude.
Yeah, thanks. All right.
Well, that's all the time we have. Good seeing you, and great to finally discuss the book whose title I've actually gotten correct. Made me feel very, very good about myself getting unstuck.
Seven balloon animal designs you can use for your kid's next birthday.
Come on now. It's getting unstuck. Seven transformational practices for golf. And we just golf nerds. And we just explored just the tip of the iceberg on one of the most important ones. And pleasure doing business with you as always. Thanks to Oscar Bravo. And I got my stuff. Can't wait to wear it. Got my new stuff.
Yeah.
And Oscar Bravo. Who is OscarBravo.com? SecretGolf.links. And as always, we couldn't be more grateful than to thank our friends at TaylorMade Golf. If you haven't checked out the golf balls, I've been using them, TP5X. They say half a club longer, and they're not kidding. In the meantime, you can email Tim. You can go to his website. You know, if you're really lucky, one student each year is chosen to live in Tim's compound.
And you don't have to shave your head or wear saffron robes.
That's right. One lucky follower of Tim's every year is put in the Tim T Tim's Ashram compound of golf. And of course, this program is produced by the Humble and Fred Show, and we will see you all next week. Competition in other places, but the horns, they blow.